President Trump's proposed federal budget for the fiscal year 2018 includes cuts to the National Endowment for the Arts, the National Endowment for Humanities, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. In fact, those areas would be completely defunded if the president has his way, but they make up only 0.016% of federal spending. On this week's Eastern Standard, defunding the arts and public broadcasting. We're interested in hearing from you. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send us a tweet at WEKUEST. Post on the Facebook page or the website, or give us a call. In just a few minutes, we'll open the phone lines and give you that number. It's time for Eastern Standard as we discuss defunding the arts and public broadcasting, right after the news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. Funding for arts, humanities, and public broadcasting would effectively be zeroed out under President Trump's proposed 2018 fiscal year budget. Organizations all across Kentucky receive funding and grants from the National Endowments for the Humanities and the Arts and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which would be eliminated under Trump's plan. On this week's Eastern Standard, we'll talk about the potential for defunding of the arts and public broadcasting. And we have with us guests who are uniquely qualified to talk about this very important topic. And we'll be interested in hearing from you, our listeners. Our show, of course, an interactive program. So we encourage you to send us an email, a tweet, post on Facebook or the website, or give us a call when we open the phone lines in just a few moments. And I'll tell you how to do that in a moment after we introduce our guests. First up, joining us by Skype from his office in Lexington is Bill Goodman, the recently appointed executive director of the Kentucky Humanities Council, as well as former host on KET, Kentucky Tonight. And, of course, viewers know him from election coverage of many other special projects and programs on KET over the years, and where he was the managing editor of the public affairs series at KET since 1996. Bill Goodman, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
Also with us on the line, Dr. Richard Taylor. Richard Taylor is a former Kentucky Poet Laureate, currently the Kenan, K-E-N-A-N, visiting writer at Transylvania University. His PhD is from the University of Kentucky, currently teaching courses such as creative writing and perspectives on literature at Transy. His areas of study include Kentucky writing and history, and his recent op-ed piece in the Lexington Herald Leader tackles the very topic of funding for the arts and public broadcasting. Dick Taylor, thanks for being with us.
Happy to be with you.
Also with us, Julie Schmidt. Julie is Senior Director of External Affairs at KET, Kentucky Educational Television. Julie serves as the Senior Executive located in the Louisville region and as KET's Director of Community Relations. Julie seeks partnerships and collaborations to further KET's mission and to serve the Commonwealth. Does that mean you do lobbying, Julie?
No, I do not. Try to inform people about our services.
Okay, excellent. And what I'd like to do in the course of today's program is from our guests discuss what the potential for zeroing out these funds for the arts and public broadcasting would mean to Kentucky. Of course, we don't have a representative of public radio here beyond myself. I can tell our listeners right up front that of a WEKU's a budget of maybe $1.4 million, $1.5 million, about $200,000 of that comes each year from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Being used to help pay for programming on the WEKU public radio stations. And I'd be interested in knowing where those funds from the federal government affect the other agencies. But let me remind you, you can contact us with your questions, your comments, your stories, WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST. The phone number, 800-621-8890. Julie Schmidt is our cousin or relative in public broadcasting, as it were. Let's talk about what the Corporation for Public Broadcasting funds mean to KET and its network. And I know 16 transmitters across the state.
Oh, yes, thank you so much. We indeed do serve the entire Commonwealth, and so universal service is very important to us. It's part of our mission, and, you know, not all areas can contribute to continue the service. More areas more urban areas maybe have more resources, but the commitment that we have is to make sure that every school and every area of our state can receive the quality educational services and also the over-the-air broadcast service. So in terms of what it would do to us, it would truly devastate our ability to do the local production that so many enjoy and count on, such as Kentucky Tonight, Kentucky Life, other great programs that we offer. It's a great part of our overall budget, and it represents about 16%.
So, Julie, what is the overall budget for KET? And I mean, can you give us numbers in terms of what kind of money actually comes? You said 16% from CPB. What does that translate to?
Well, for the CPB, it's about $3 million. Overall, I don't have those numbers right in front of me. Because being a state agency, we also receive a portion of our funds from the state that help support our educational services. A lot of people know KET through what they see through the broadcast, but they might not realize that we indeed serve all the Kentucky schools. We're used in classrooms throughout the state. And in this digital age, that's really important. It's a key part of how teachers teach today. It's a new world compared to when I was in school, for sure. These classrooms are intuitive, and they have smart boards, and they really count on KET to bring the content for that classwork. In addition, we do a lot with the GED, making sure people who fell by the wayside. In Kentucky, it's about 1 in 10, some areas 2 or 3 in 10, that did not finish or complete high school. And so KET provides the largest preparatory program actually in the nation to help people continue their work so they can graduate and go on to work or continue their studies. So, and another area that we're really engaged in, that is early childhood, working with daycare centers and other preschool programs to make sure that the teachers have the training that they need so the children they're teaching are kindergarten ready. So I could go on and on.
Oh, sure,
there's
yeah.
so much to KET beyond the broadcast.
A lot of service there. And you said $3 million. I mean, if I just do the numbers in my head, you said it's 16% of your budget. You know, that's about a sixth of KET's budget. So we're talking $15, $18 million or something total. And losing $3 million would have an impact on your ability to provide the services you do.
Oh, absolutely. And then another thing I do want to share, and this is for public and radio and television all together, the national office, the National Budget Office, did an independent study because they wanted to see what the impact of the federal funds really has on our entire system. And it was commissioned to Booz and Company, which is a very reputable organization. And they came back and said, there is no other viable source to take the place of the federal funds. And indeed, it wouldn't just cripple it, it would devastate, and the public broadcasting system, as we know it, would collapse. So that's pretty strong, and it's the federal funding, all of us use that as a baseline, and then from there raise additional funding from public and private combined, so it's a beautiful public-private partnership that serves all of our states and our communities.
And Julie, one thing I guess we should clarify for our listeners also, I mean, some listeners think, you know, they think that the public broadcasting happens because of federal funding. The federal funding pays for public broadcasting. I mean, yes, it's a source of funds, but way back when it was founded, I guess the decision was made that the funds are actually paid to the stations. For instance, NPR doesn't receive money from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting directly. PBS isn't paid directly by the CPB, but the money comes, I assume public TV is the same as public radio. KET gets the money, and then you can use that money to buy programming from PBS and other sources.
Yeah, actually, viewers help us raise that money. The viewers that support KET all across this great state, there's about 40,000 today. Their contributions from, you know, $5 to $5,000, whatever it might be, that collectively goes together, and that's how we purchase our PBS programming that people enjoy across the country,
sure.
across the Commonwealth.
All right. We also have with us, this is Julie Schmidt from KET. We want to transition now to Bill Goodman. And Bill is someone very closely associated with KET since 1996, but now he's the executive director of the Kentucky Humanities Council. And Bill, tell me about the Humanities Council and its sources of funding from the federal government.
John, our story is a little bit different from Julie and KET's and more like yours as far as budgetary concerns. In fact, our budget is about the same size as yours to operate on a statewide basis. We are a agency which receives no, zero state funds from state government. Our funding to the tune of close to 75 or 80% come from the federal government, come from Congress, and filtered through the National Endowment for the Humanities and the work that we do across the state of Kentucky. So the picture is not quite as positive for us, because if we lose funding from Congress, a lot of our programs, including the literacy and learning programs that we have been doing in Kentucky for many years, will pretty much go away. Our budget, as you indicated, your budget is about 1.4, a little bit less than that. We get about $750,000 from Congress, somewhere between $720 and $750. And I think that's important for people to know that the rest of that, as Julie pointed out, is made up of our members from foundations and grants and partners that we work with to balance out our budget. So the bulk of our budget, though, comes from the federal government. But you know what, John? I think that what I've had an opportunity to do since joining Kentucky Humanities in January is to turn this story around and maybe paint a little brighter picture than some people might expect me to, because it's given me the opportunity and it's given Kentucky Humanities the opportunity to tell a lot more people and to educate them about the programs that we offer across the state of Kentucky. It's really given me the opportunity to be invited to speak across the state, to meet with our members of the federal delegation, our senators and representatives in Washington, and to explain to them, maybe some for the first time, exactly what Kentucky Humanities has been doing for 45 years we've been in existence. So it's a positive story and an educational process that we've been going through. And we hope that through support from members of Congress and our federal delegation, and through our members and through the many people who support us and support the humanities, that we'll do a good job in coming out on the bright end of this story.
Now, Bill, actually, I guess I should disclose the fact that I'm a member of the board of the Kentucky Broadcasters Association, and as such have for the last 3 years attended the annual visits to the Hill, to Washington, to talk to legislators. And during our recent meetings in February of this year, we were assured by the Kentucky delegation, by both of our senators and I think all of the members of the House, reassured those of us attending that they were supportive of public broadcasting in Kentucky and that they would do their best to maintain funding for public broadcasting. But you raise a very important point, this issue of telling the story of what these organizations and agencies do. We're going to get to Dick Taylor, who is at Transy University, and he wrote an op-ed piece for the Lexington Herald Leader about the funding for the arts and public broadcasting. And we're interested in hearing from you during this week's program. The topic, the potential for defunding the arts and public broadcasting in Kentucky. 800-621-8890. Feel free to get on the line. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST. You can post on the Facebook page or the website. But that phone number, once again, 800-621-8890. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Thank you for joining us. Our program live on this Thursday morning, the show repeated on Sunday evenings and available as a podcast as well. Our topic this week, the potential of defunding the arts and public broadcasting and its effect on Kentucky. I'm John Hingsbergen. Our guests are Bill Goodman of the Kentucky Humanities Council, Julie Schmidt of KET, Kentucky Educational Television, and also Dr. Richard Taylor, who is a visiting writer at Transylvania University and teaches courses such as creative writing and perspectives on literature. His areas of study include Kentucky writing and history, and he recently wrote an op-ed piece in the Lexington Herald Leader on this potential for defunding by the federal government. Dick Taylor, tell our listeners what you wrote and you know what was the concern that you expressed.
Basically, I made a point about how essential the arts as well as the humanities and PBS are to citizens in this state. We're a small state. We do not have a great number of larger cities that support and disseminate ideas. We are made up of small communities. And the NEA, to lose the NEA, and I've had some experience both in Washington and in Kentucky with the Kentucky Arts Council, which is an affiliate of the NEA, those organizations bring the arts to virtually every voting district in the state. They go into schools, they affect theaters, they bring music to us, they support exhibitions, they support the literary arts in Kentucky, which has a particularly strong tradition. I should mention that I come to this more as an outsider. I don't work for either of these institutions, at least in a regular way. However, during the 1970s, I had some experience with the Kentucky Arts Council. I had the opportunity while I was in graduate school to work part-time traveling to high schools all over the states, high schools as well as middle schools in some cases and even elementary schools. And I saw there a desperate need for something beyond what students were getting. There was a philosopher, or educator really, at Harvard University named Howard Gardner, who wrote about the eight intelligences each of us possesses. And one of our great lacks in education, it seems to me, is treating or nurturing creative intelligence. And what that program did was give kids an opportunity to explore their own creativity. If the funding is cut, those programs will cease. The Arts Council operates, and I'm some distance from it now, but the Arts Council has a very small staff, like the Humanities Council, and it accomplishes a great deal. It amazes me just how much these organizations do. One thing that should be realized is that most of the money federally that goes to the NEA, or a good portion of that money, 40% actually, comes directly to the states. And with those grants comes the condition that the states match the amounts through their agencies. And this has the effect of permitting Kentuckians and in some ways encouraging Kentucky entities to buy into the arts. And as a consequence, we have a fairly vibrant arts community over the state of Kentucky. And I'm afraid to think what no funding to the NEA would do to the Kentucky Arts Council, which has I don't know the numbers, but they don't have an enormous budget, and yet it amazes me how much they accomplish. Let me mention that one of the things they do, for instance, is sponsor a program called Poetry Out Loud, which permits students to, in effect, recite or declaim poems in a national competition. I've witnessed a few of those competitions, and I've seen that Kentucky students fare very well nationally when they are given the opportunity. And creative intelligence, I come back to it, is something that we've neglected in the public schools, with very few exceptions. It's something that needs to be supported, not detracted from.
So Dick, you're an author, you're a poet, and you're talking about elements of the arts, really. Let me address this question to Bill Goodman and Julie Schmidt. In general, public broadcasting, for instance, and Bill, again, also representing, representing the Humanities Council, but with a background in public broadcasting. Public broadcasting has kind of shifted. Over the years, you know, public broadcasting was supposed to be educational broadcasting. And of course, KET provides a tremendous amount of educational service. But there's been a lot of emphasis on news and information and moving into areas that were once the domain, I guess, of commercial media and commercial paid journalism. How do you see the comparison between the service that some of these organizations and, for instance, our public broadcasting provides today versus what was maybe 30, 40 years ago when PBS stations and even public radio stations were broadcasting lectures and talks and arts and cultural activities as their primary focus?
Well, John, let me add to what Richard said. And by the way, Richard is a renowned Kentucky poet and has done such a wonderful job spelling out the real cause for the Arts Council in Kentucky and the Humanities Council, as well as public radio and broadcasting. But I think Julie also mentioned that the real key here is rural Kentucky and the outreach that we all try to make throughout the year. Certainly, KET has always been strong in those areas where, and we also, of course, very much support our urban areas, but those of our larger cities like Lexington and Louisville and Owensboro and Bowling Green can sometimes provide for the arts. And there are more foundations, grantors, funders in the larger cities. We are really, I think all of us are stressing that if this funding goes away, a lot of what is going on in rural Kentucky will also go away. Let me just give you one example of being down in Whelan, Kentucky, in Floyd County, just a couple of weeks ago, where we opened our first of 15 over the next 2 years hometown teams, Museum on Main Street exhibits through the Smithsonian. Our partnership with the Smithsonian Institution in Washington is rare, and these Museum on Main Street exhibits only go to small rural towns across America with under a certain population. And be proud of this. Whelan, Kentucky is the smallest town in the United States of America to ever have a Smithsonian exhibit.
Wow.
It's in the Whelan is, as you know, John, I'm sure Richard will remember, the home of King Kelly Coleman. And the citizens of Whelan, Jerry Fultz, the mayor, have worked really hard and not only putting together this quality Smithsonian exhibit, but also gathering memorabilia from all over several regions that have to do with sports. The lesson is not just playing a game. It's how sports contributes to community. Sports brings families together. Sports provides an avenue for dialogue and spirit in a community. And quite frankly, if our funding goes away or is significantly cut, those exhibits will go away. We will not have the opportunity for in the next 2 years. We're going to be in towns, Elkton, Kentucky, Hodgensville, up in northern Kentucky in Grant County. Those are the kinds of venues that sometimes people in those communities don't get a chance to go to Washington, D.C., to the Smithsonian. So the Smithsonian comes to them. And that's why it's important for all of us to be really concerned that we want to continue to do this work and continue to do this work in rural Kentucky.
Back to my question, and maybe I'll address this to Julie. I mean, public broadcasting has focused a lot more on news and conversations about politics and current events. And of course, again, especially with public TV, there's still a strong focus on the arts. But do you think that has changed public broadcasting in a way that causes people to be a little bit more skeptical about whether or not there should be federal funding to support the work we do, such as, you know, our all-day format of news and talk programming on WEKU, for instance, is sometimes criticized as not what people really originally intended to hear from public radio. But now we're providing a service that's very different than what this station did maybe 20 years ago.
You know, I'm not really as familiar with the radio service, but in terms of TV, KET has been delivering public affairs programming for a very long time, I think at least, 30 years. And so for so many Kentuckians that want to know what's going on in Frankfort, what's happening at our state house at the Capitol and throughout the Kentucky General Assembly, sometimes the only way they can get that information is through KET, because so many other media sources have had to contract their services. There's no longer the bureau that there used to be. And so if you live, especially like Bill was just saying, maybe you live in a outlying part of our state, you might get more news from maybe Nashville or from Cincinnati or from another media market, and it's hard to get the information of what's happening here in Kentucky. So people really do count on KET to follow the bills and follow the information of what's happening. Our Kentucky Tonight program each Monday night gives viewers an opportunity to learn more about the issues that are being discussed. And it's balanced. It's both sides. We try not to take a stance, but instead give the folks that are writing the laws to give them an opportunity to talk directly to viewers, and also an opportunity for viewers to call in and ask their questions. Renee Shaw does a marvelous job during the session. Each night she does a nightly legislative update that gives you an overview of what happened that day. And sometimes the lawmakers themselves watch it because they might have been spending the day in committee meetings that were different than the ones that maybe are happening across the way in the House or the Senate. So it's a very vital service, especially for those that are engaged and want to know what's happening in the way of public affairs. And in fact, we've just upgraded and now have an app so folks can get this on the go. They can get it on their cell phones, or they can get it through their computer, however they want to watch it. But we consider that a real valuable service to all Kentucky.
Julie Schmidt is with KET. She is the Senior Director of External Affairs at Kentucky Educational Television. Bill Goodman of the Kentucky Humanities Council is with us. Dr. Richard Taylor of Transylvania University, writer, author, teacher, and wrote a recent op-ed piece in the Lexington Herald Leader on the issue of funding for the Arts and for public broadcasting. We want to invite our listeners to be part of our conversation. What questions do you have about the impact of the federal budget that would zero out these funds? What are your questions about that impact? What are your questions about how public broadcasting or the arts in Kentucky are funded? Give us a call, 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Post your comment on the Facebook page or the website, or send a tweet at WEKUEST. Something I should point out and maybe get some reaction from our guests here, a couple of things that are going on in the news. I don't know, some of our listeners maybe on the eastern part of Kentucky may be aware of challenges to the funding of our friends over at West Virginia. West Virginia Public Broadcasting is actually a state organization that operates the state's public TV and radio stations. And the governor's proposed budget in West Virginia proposed taking away the funding that kept that operation going. I believe there's some negotiation going on, and that a lot of that funding will be preserved. But that's an additional challenge that West Virginia has faced in addition to the potential loss of federal funds. I just read this week about Maryland Public Television, and I don't know if Julie, if you follow this or not, but apparently Maryland Public Television, their legislature in the state of Maryland, is considering picking up the funding. So that anything that Maryland Public TV loses, they're going to fill it in with the state budget.
Well, that's wonderful. They value the great service they do in Maryland. That's wonderful.
What about Kentucky? Do we know anything about support for public broadcasting and for the arts and the public broadcasting in Frankfort within our General Assembly, within the governor's mansion? Have any interactions, or have we heard anything publicly stated by our state officials?
Not that I know of.
Well, I'm happy to say that we have a great support from our members from the Kentucky the Kentucky Journal Assembly, and we just value their service so much. And I think when they know fully that, you know, more than a million people use KET each week, we're used in classrooms across the state, we're used to make sure that all children have access to high-quality educational opportunity, beginning with our youngest children, all the way to making sure we have a qualified workforce. And so we really believe that workforce is essential, and we want to be a complete partner in that. In addition, you know, KET is local. The programming that we put on the air and the programming that we decide to really focus on, is those decisions are made right here in Kentucky, and we want to hear from folks what they believe. Just last month, we did a documentary about the opioid problem that we have across the country, but in particular in Kentucky. The Journey to Recovery was a Inside Opioid Addiction, just a beautiful documentary that lifted up people that are beating this, some of the great work that's going on, some of the healthcare providers and others that are making a difference, and we want to get that information out. There's so many other things that we've done that really tie in honoring our Kentucky veterans. We just did a documentary on our Kentucky veterans of the Vietnam War, and I know Bill does the same thing. It's about localism. It's about Kentucky. It's lifting up our citizens, not necessarily the national scene, but what matters to Kentuckians.
John, if I might add that I think this is important to point out, that for all of us, this is really not a Democratic or Republican situation. It's really not an issue that is party related. It's something that I try to say to a lot of people. Eliminating the NEH funding for Kentucky and 55 other affiliates and councils across the United States, it really won't in any way balance the budget or reduce anyone's taxes. For the humanities in general, and we're on the low end of this, and it might be akin to what the arts might receive, but for every citizen of the United States of America, it's 46 cents. That's what all of the programs that we produce throughout the year, Chautauqua in the schools, our literacy and learning program called Primetime Family Reading Time, the other programs like the Kentucky Book Fair, which we just undertook the operation of it last fall. Our next book fair, November the 11th, 2017, is coming up. So it's really not very much money. It's not going to have a big factor in the overall budget, the federal budget. So we, for public radio and broadcasting, for the interest that Richard has in the arts and for humanities, it's important that everyone support us and let our congressional delegation across the nation know that you support us.
We need to take a break. We'll be back. Eastern Standard continues talking about the potential for defunding the arts and the public broadcasting. 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We're talking about the possibility of defunding the arts and public broadcasting in the federal budget. We're interested in hearing from our listeners, your questions, your comments, your personal stories about the arts and public broadcasting, and your opinion of whether or not that 46 cents is worth it to you to support the arts. I will point out that I don't have the exact number, but the number I feel like I've heard about public broadcasting nationwide for public radio and TV is like $1.36, something like that, in the course of a year that is paid by the general public for public broadcasting. And talking about the budgets, the amount of funding we're talking about, I think $445 million that goes to public broadcasting. I think the National Endowment for the Arts, the National Endowment for the Humanities, each get $145-150 million total. So we're talking about maybe $700 million total funds that go to the arts and public broadcasting. Your opinion about that is welcome during this final segment of Eastern Standard. 800-621-8890. WEKU Eastern Standard @gmail.com. Send a tweet @WEKU EST. So,
John, do we have time for another little story that sort of underlines exactly what this discussion is all about?
Absolutely. Bill Goodman?
One of the things that we've heard that I've become more familiar with in the last 2 or 3 months since I joined Kentucky Humanities is about the very needed response and financing of STEM programs. Julie talked about workforce development programs, which KET has been so vitally a part of and will continue to be in the future. But in the research that I've done, there is plenty of room for STEM and STEAM and humanities and arts at the same table. The story that I want to relate to you is one that I became familiar with when a very wealthy entrepreneur, Mark Cuban, the billionaire owner of the Dallas Mavericks, during an interview that he did not too long ago, and somebody asked him about the about his thoughts on this, and he frankly put it out there and called it the growing demand for liberal arts majors, and that kind of took the interviewer a little bit by surprise. He said, forget finance, forget programming, machines are going to do all of that. We need people who are free thinkers and can connect the dots. And I think that's what Richard tried to stress in his op-ed, and what I've tried to also say to a number of people is that, for example, I was in Owensboro on Monday and met with the president of Kentucky Wesleyan College, Bart Darrell. He's an English major. His brother, Bracken Darrell, is the CEO of Logitech, the technology firm in Silicon Valley. He was also educated in Kentucky, graduated from Hendricks College in Arkansas with what? An English degree. You can call on a number of technology experts who hit up Fortune 500 companies. They were liberal arts majors. They were humanities majors in college because it gave them the ability to speak, to write, to critically think about the technology of today and tomorrow. So it's really not an argument or a clash between STEM and liberal arts or STEM and the humanities. It's bringing both of those to the table to give these young people across the state of Kentucky the ability to discuss, to write, to be able to critically think about what their future is going to be about in the area of science and technology and engineering and math. So it's not an argument that we're having with anybody. We think there's room at the table for everyone.
That's Bill Goodman, and he is executive director of the Kentucky Humanities Council. Dick Taylor at Transylvania University, I assume you have some comments on Bill's remarks.
Yes, I couldn't agree more with what Bill and Julie have been saying. And, you know, we speak of these as separate entities. Actually, we're all, in a way, on the same team. By that, I mean that the citizenry of this state profits from exposure to ideas, exposure to the arts, and exposure to public information disseminated through the various media. And when we lose that, we're losing that kind of critical intelligence that that democracy really needs to function properly. If we're going to be subject to sound bites and bumper stickers, it seems to me that democracy is going to suffer. On the other hand, if we produce critically thinking, liberally educated persons who raise questions, persons who learn to make arguments, persons who explore their own creativity, Kentucky's going to benefit from that, and we don't have such a storied educational history that we can afford to lose any contributor to our destiny. And it troubles. The reason I wrote that piece, I was just shocked to hear it. I know there had been overtures in the past, but to do away with the endowments and to defund public education, public television. But these things are critical to who we are. I wonder what any of us would be without the benefits. And it's not just a question of promoting individuals. It's promoting audiences, creating an appreciation for intellectual discourse and exchanges, creating an audience for a musical performance or an art exhibit. All of those things ultimately go to measure us as a civilization, as a people.
Okay,
and without them, we are in sorry shape.
Dr. Richard Taylor with us on the line on this week's Eastern Standard, and we have invited listeners to be part of our conversation. And I want to go ahead and let's talk to Laura from Lawrenceburg, who's called in to 800-621-8890. You can also send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. But Laura from Lawrenceburg, go right ahead with your comment.
Good morning. I am just flabbergasted at the idea, or appalled at the idea of losing funding for public radio. We need an educated and informed electorate for a democracy, and we're already real short on that, especially in Kentucky. George Carlin wrote a book a few years ago called Brain Droppings, and this is really not off the subject. This is his quote. Keep in mind the news media are not independent. They're sort of a bulletin board and public relations firm for the ruling class, the people who run things. Those who decide what news you will or will not hear are paid by and tolerated purely at the whim of those who hold economic power. If the parent corporation doesn't want you to know something, it won't be on the news, period. Or at the very least, it will be slanted to suit them, been barely followed up. Enjoy your snooze. And that's the end of George Carlin's quote.
When did he write that, Laura?
I'll flip to the front here and look through it.
Just curious.
It's been some years ago.
I'm guessing.
He's dead, but I love him.
I'm guessing the 70s or 80s, perhaps. But that's very, very apropos comment.
Okay, it sure is. 1997.
Okay, still 20 years ago. Laura, thank you so much for bringing that to us, and thank you for calling in and being part of our program this morning.
Thank you.
John, this is Bill. Do we have somebody else waiting, or can I ask?
We do have somebody else waiting, but go right ahead, please. But Laura is no longer on the line, just so you know. Because of the technical matters, I've had to let her go as I, keep everybody else connected here.
Well, maybe it's better to go on and take your next caller or emailer.
All right, let's talk to Maddie from Wilmore. And I think I just lost Dr. Richard Taylor. So if we can get Dr. Taylor back on the line, we would appreciate that. But Maddie from Wilmore, you are on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make two points. One of them is, as a struggling professional musician, public funding for the arts is absolutely essential. There is no private funding. There is no corporate funding. And we give concerts, and people are very generous and able to give what they can, but we have to be supported by our federal government. And the second point that I wanted to make is that public funding for journalism is essential, too, to hold people accountable. The point of a free press is to hold the government and people in power accountable for their actions. And so I just find it appalling that they would take such a small portion of our federal budget and cut it as though they're doing us all a big favor.
Maddie, how would you or do you personally benefit from that funding that is provided by the federal government for the arts?
Well, I haven't managed to get any grants,
no.
But it was mostly through...
I was wondering.
It was mostly through my education. They underwrote my education. I was born out of state. I didn't go to school here in Kentucky, but they underwrite public education and public funding for the arts through education, and it's just essential for scholarship programs and other performing venues.
All right, Maddie, thank you so much. We have also with us, of course, on the air, we have Bill Goodman and Julie Schmidt and Dr. Richard Taylor back on the line. On this week's Eastern Standard, talking about the potential for defunding the arts and public broadcasting. Any reaction to the comments you've heard so far to our guests?
John, responding to that, let me ask you to I think she's exactly right. And again, the financing that we pointed out is minuscule compared to some of the expenditures. And most of the time, and a lot of people would argue, and properly so, we have a country to run and a budget to put together. But in looking at reductions in our funding, it would be devastating. One of the stories I wanted Richard to just very quickly tell is when I'm out and about around the state talking about Kentucky Humanities, sometimes people aren't as familiar with our programs as I think they should be. But if I said Chautauqua or Chautauqua in the schools, they immediately know, oh, yeah, I've seen Henry Clay or Daniel Boone at my Rotary Club or Mary Breckenridge or Alice Lloyd appeared at my church event. Richard is one of our juried guests who just a few months ago, and I think he's coming back in May, we are trying to put out new Chautauqua actors each and every year. And Richard, if you will just tell the audience, John and Julie, the rigor and the effort that these actors sponsored by Kentucky Humanities go through, and what your job is in being sure that they're ready and able to go out and really tell the story of history in Kentucky.
Well, there are several of us, Bill, who would not only endorse this program but get to see the amount of effort that goes into preparing what is presented to often school audiences, but wider audiences as well. And in most instances, they relate either to or aspects of Kentucky history, especially figures who have been either marginalized or who can become models for young people to, and all of us, I suppose, to emulate. It amazes me how much care goes into critiquing the scripts and getting an honest message out to Kentuckians. And one of the effects of it, I think, is we all feel better about ourselves, and we get a sense of who we are and where we are from. Chautauqua is one of the great contributions the Humanities Council makes to living in Kentucky, and it makes a difference in communities where that Chautauqua might be the only game in town. It might be the only thing from outside of television or, you know, just regular network television or Netflix that people experience in the way of arts and ideas and with that local flavor you've spoken about. Telling people who Daniel Boone was, who was, Isaac Murphy, the first black jockey to win a Kentucky Derby. Those matters are important, and they are part of our heritage. And when we lose that, we've lost everything. We've lost whatever differentiates us, distinguishes us from every other place.
You know, the Chautauquans, they bring history to life like nothing else. I mean, they're really marvelous in classrooms across the state, and also for adult learners. I know when I ran Leadership Kentucky, each year we had different ones come from Henry Clay to Daniel Boone and so forth. And like you just said, it really unites you as an organization, and it gives you a good sense of the past, which really leads you to the future. So that program is very important to our state. And KET had the honor of doing a production about the Kentucky Chautauquan program. It's a Kentucky Muse. And for any viewer or listener who would be more interested in knowing more about Bill's program, you can go to KET's website and you can watch it online. That program would be accessible there, and I know he'd have more information for you as well, but I just want to echo their comments. It's just so important.
We are just about out of time, but we did get a message by Facebook. Trevor actually has been messaging us via Facebook all week saying he had some questions for the show, and he just wrote, is this defunding definitely happening? If so, when will it occur? If, when it does occur, how can we make sure that radio and TV programs that we love continue? Any ideas about the budget, you know, when this process will occur?
Well, it's a process, and the actual way it works is the House and the Senate will devise the budget. They'll craft that, and the president's budget was really represents what his overall goals are for his administration, and then from there, Congress takes it. So we feel that it's very important that our citizens across the state let their members of Congress know how they feel about public television, about KET, public radio, and the arts, and share their feelings, because it really is critical. They want to hear from them. So,
John, this is Bill, and just to add to what Julie said, all of our federal delegation are home for their Easter recess. Some are publicly speaking in town hall meetings, or maybe just appearing at a retirement center to meet and greet. It's a good chance to either see them in person, or if you can't do that, as Julie said, let them know via email or phone call or letter to their offices in Washington. As we all said, we think that our federal delegation is supporting the arts and humanities and public broadcasting in Kentucky. They will be influential in how their colleagues in Congress from across the nation vote on these matters. We will know that by the end of this month, and you may not know this, but our 17 appropriation is not complete. Most likely a continuing resolution will be passed on April 28th, and then they begin the process of the 18 budget. And that's the critical funding that we all are concerned about. And going forward, we sure do need support from every citizen, every school teacher, every educator, historian, and just general supporters in rural Kentucky and in our cities to say that they appreciate the arts, humanities, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and a lot of other agencies that have been discussed about being on the chopping block, like the Appalachian Regional Commission.
All right. Bill Goodman is Executive Director of the Kentucky Humanities Council. And we've had with us also Julie Schmidt, Senior Director of External Affairs at KET, Dr. Richard Taylor, former Kentucky Poet Laureate, visiting writer at Transylvania University. Thank you all for being part of our program. This is Eastern Standard. Write to us anytime with your comments, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Thanks to Marissa Hempel and Devonna Gaines, our associate producers, for helping us out with this week's program on the WEKU stations.